Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How do chefs at the best local restaurants use and interpret food in ways that work for diners here? And how far does their influence extend beyond North Texas? My guest today has been writing about food for more than 20 years, earning multiple honors for her work in books, magazines, and as food editor and restaurant critic for the Los Angeles Times and now the Dallas Morning News. Leslie Brenner joins us to talk about how her work and her impressions of the scene in North Texas and Dallas in particular have changed over her tenure here. Leslie, welcome to Think.
Thanks so much, Chris.
So how ambitious do you think Dallas is in terms of its restaurants?
Well, I don't think as a city it's terribly ambitious. I think that what's happening here right now on the dining scene is pretty exciting because I think it's a dining scene that's kind of on the rise, and I think that's been going on. You know, I've been feeling that since for about a year and a half, that exciting things are really starting to happen. But the chefs who are really doing something ambitious are really, really pretty few. I mean, a handful of them. The great thing is that what they're doing is exciting enough to keep the scene really interesting. But ambition is not the first thing that jumps into my head when I think of the dining scene here.
Is that maybe about those of us who were eating at those restaurants as much as about what the chefs might want to do?
I'm starting to think that may be the case, that it's not a town full of the most adventurous palates necessarily. I mean, there definitely are people who are really into it and want to try something really different. But I think there's probably a core group of diners who really has a certain comfort zone and would like to stay in that zone.
What kind of influence do you see chefs exerting on one another? You know, something exciting happens here, and then across town, there's a different spin on the same idea.
That's a great question, and I think it's a question that, you know, really kind of goes all through the arts. I think that people, you know, writers write for other writers, and I do think that chefs probably, I've never asked a chef this directly, but mm-hmm. I bet they do. I bet they're, you know, and they definitely go to each other's restaurants, you know, especially late at night, and so I think that there probably is a good deal of that.
Well, even, you know, who hasn't gone home and tried to recreate something amazing? And in my case, it never quite works out, but talk about local ingredients. This is such kind of a trend everywhere, and people are talking about it. Are we talking about it more than we're doing it particularly well?
Well, I think that, you know, the whole farm-to-table thing, the phrase itself just got such traction around the country, and then we kind of jumped onto it big time right around the time that I arrived in Dallas in 2009. It started to get really big. And I think the part of the problem is that we have kind of a short growing season, a difficult growing season, but we have such wonderful products here. So, you know, I mean, first of all, you know, Gulf shrimp, Texas peaches, you know, sometimes we can do great tomatoes. You know, there really is a wealth of wonderful quail. There's a lot going on here, but I think, you know, there's a few chefs who really are plugged into that and really making that happen on their plates. You know, I'm thinking of Casey Thompson in Fort Worth at Brownstone, but I think David Uger at Lucia, his menu is changing so constantly, and I think that has a lot to do with what's, you know, what he's finding in the market.
That's a lot of work as well. I mean, and plus you have to, I suppose from the chef's perspective, you have to really be able to predict whether people are going to want to try these things that you keep adding to the menu.
Yeah. I think, you know, in most cases, it's not scary stuff, but it's funny. I mean, thinking about Lucia and David Uger is a chef who really is super creative and ambitious. And what's funny is you rarely see beef on his menu. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it, for those people who do have that comfort zone issue, that may be a challenging restaurant. You walk in and there's, you know, pickled sardines or, you know, braised rabbit leg and things like that. But it's, you know, if you're adventurous, there's nothing more wonderful.
Let's talk about beef, because I don't know whether or not the perception is accurate, but when I have friends come in from out of town, often they'll ask me about the best steak place to go to.
Well, I personally think that this is that Dallas is a great city for steakhouses. I love the steakhouses here. I mean, I spent many, many years living in New York and tried all of those steakhouses, including Peter Luger, the most famous one. And I spent many years in L.A. And, you know, Los Angeles has Cut, which is Wolfgang Puck's amazing steakhouse. But Dallas, as a town for steaks, I think the steakhouses here are really amazing, you know, just sort of at a general level.
Do you have to go to a steakhouse to get a really good cut of beef for the most part?
I think there are probably restaurants that have a great cut of beef, but you kind of have to specialize. I mean, you've got to, you know, you really want to have it dry aged and you want to cook it super, super hot so you get that amazing sear on the meat. So I think it's usually best done at the best steakhouses.
So when you are reviewing a restaurant, you have to go back, what, three or four times usually?
I go at least twice and sometimes three or four times.
How often is the experience entirely consistent?
I'd say about probably 70% of the time, mm-hmm. I'm just guessing. In terms of like, you know, I come out knowing, okay, well, that's probably going to be a three. That's probably going to be a four, you know, whatever it is, you know. But sometimes it's just radically, radically different. And it amazes me. Like, how is that the same restaurant I went to 2 weeks ago?
Now, the star system is always interesting and something people love to debate. For you, I mean, you give these star ratings, but obviously you're hoping that people are reading the entire piece. Do you have conflicted feelings or do you think it's a great way to sort of give people a shorthand sense of your experience?
Well, sometimes, of course, I wish I didn't have to do this star thing. But but I think, you know, I think there's a real value to it. You know, I think sometimes I want to write a review when I'm just like talking about what's wonderful about a place. And then I give it, you know, I give it three stars and people think, oh, well, it should have been five stars if it was that, you know, if it was that pleasant. Mm-hmm. But maybe there wasn't the ambition or, you know, just sort of the level of service or, you know, whatever it is. But I think there's a real, I don't know, it's funny. If you ever read Sam Sifton's reviews at the New York Times, sometimes you read those reviews and you think, oh, my God, that sounds like the most amazing place. And he gave it one star. So in a way, it does kind of free up the writing, you know, because if you're writing so that people really, like if we didn't have the stars and then you're writing a review so that people really have to try to understand, like, how good is it? I mean, how, you know, in terms of the money I'm going to spend and the experience I'm going to have, you would find yourself having to be so, like, picky and kind of, you know, negative in places where you don't necessarily want to be negative. Mm-hmm. So it kind of frees a critic up to, you know, to loosen up a little in the writing and try to convey the experience. Because, you know, part of what I do is try to give our readers a sense of, you know, is this a place where I want to go and spend my hard-earned money? Mm-hmm. And part of it is, you know, there's plenty of readers who are never going to go to these restaurants and they just want to read about them. And I want to give them a sort of vicarious experience of dining there.
Yeah, I like thinking about that element because there are also people in your audience who eat out at sort of high-end restaurants on a regular basis, and there are others for whom it's a treat three times a year. Are you able to serve both of those groups of people simultaneously?
Well, I try to. You know, we definitely cover, you know, part of what I try to do as a newspaper person is write about what's new. So I'm trying to cover the new restaurants as they open. And, you know, many of them are much higher end. But in a way, you know, our dismal economy is helping me in this because right now a lot of the newer restaurants that are opening are much less expensive. So, you know, in any case, we also have a secondary review where we write about, you know, places that tend to be much less expensive. So we're trying to really, you know, put something in for everybody.
Are you influenced by the decor in a restaurant? I mean, obviously, ambiance matters, but, you know, there are some restaurants where they put a whole lot of money into what the dining room looks like, and there are other places where that's not an issue.
Yes. I mean, it's definitely part of the experience, and I definitely, you know, I try to convey it in the writing, and I take it into account. You know, if I were going to give something a five, it had better be a pleasant place to sit.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I mean, I'm thinking about this little restaurant in Richardson that I reviewed called Bamboo and a little Thai place that, you know, really a family-run shoestring, you know, with amazing, amazing food. And I gave it a rating of a 4. And it's pleasant enough to sit there, you know, but it's not – they hardly put any money into it. But they made it look nice. You know, it needs to feel – it needs to feel like a comfortable and happy place to be.
Is there an ideal sort of service, or does that vary with the type of restaurant? I mean, obviously you want your servers to be attentive and friendly, but is there something else that you're looking for?
Sure. I think, you know, if you're at the French Room and you've gotten all dressed up and, you know, in this amazing, you know, historic dining room with the soaring vaulted ceilings with the murals painted, you know, there's a level of service that needs to be very formal.
You don't want your waiter saying, "Hey guys, how's it
exactly
hanging?"
That would feel very weird. But if you're, you know, someplace like Smoke in Oak Cliff that feels very laid back, I mean, you know, Tim Byers is a wonderful, wonderful chef. I love his food. It's a great restaurant. But there, you know, if it weren't laid back and friendly, you know, "Hey, how are you doing? My name is," you know, it would feel odd.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the sense that you have that the kitchen and the front of the house are united, and how often you're able to sort of tell that the relationships aren't as good as they could be.
It's funny. It's something where if I find myself thinking about that, there's a problem. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like I think about it very often. I think that in most Dallas restaurants, it doesn't feel to me like a huge issue. It's funny, I heard an old interview of Ruth Reichel on, I think she was on Fresh Air, must have been anyway, she was talking about a restaurant that she had worked at in Wisconsin when she was a student Michigan. And she was talking about how the whole thing was really a battle between the front and the back of the house. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I've spent a lot of time in restaurants behind the scenes and stuff. And I really haven't been any place, spent much time any place where it felt like a battle like that. But I think if as a diner you start to feel that, I think it's a real problem.
She, of course, is famous for having spent years in disguise. She went around to these different places. Have you ever considered anything like that?
Well, before I came to Dallas, I went and tried on wigs, mm-hmm. and took photos of myself in them. And when I looked, I mean, it was I just looked like a woman wearing a wig. It was like I felt like I was so much more obvious than if I didn't do that. But I, you know, I try to change my look. I have wild weight swings. One week I'll be 180 pounds. The next week I'll be 100 pounds. I'm kidding. But,
I was thinking you have a fat suit that you put on.
The truth of the matter is that once you're in a city a certain amount of time, people begin to be able to pick you out. And what's good is if I could make at least one visit without being recognized, which I feel like usually happens. I mean, certainly not always, but it's really important that a restaurant not know in advance that I'm coming. So I always make reservations using pseudonyms, and, you know, I pay my bills using credit cards with phony names and all of that. But it's, you know, the disguise thing. I mean, when I first got here, I went out. I had been here a couple months, and so I worried that I was starting to get known. And I went to this restaurant that I had been to before and had wonderful service. And that was Lola, which no longer exists. And I put my hair up and I put these crazy glasses on. And my son said to me, "You are not going out like that." I got to the restaurant and they said, "Oh, so nice to see you again."
My guest is Leslie Brenner. She is restaurant critic for the Dallas Morning News. We're talking this hour about dining out in North Texas, and we invite your calls and emails now. The phone number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a self-designed program that allows an unconventional approach to your graduate education. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Dallas Morning News restaurant critic Leslie Brenner. We're talking about dining out in North Texas. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or via email to think@kera.org. So at this point, when you go into a restaurant and you're planning to review it, do you feel like there's a flurry of activity in the kitchen and everybody knows it's you and therefore you're having a different experience than the people next to you?
Not usually. I don't, you know, I think the better restaurants, if they do recognize me, they try to be cool about it. But, you know, it's so funny. I think that even though, you know, I know that my photograph is up in the kitchens and all of that. But I had a phone call recently from somebody, from a waiter who had waited, who had, you know, served my table at a place that I had just reviewed. Mm-hmm. And he called me and he said, you know what, I have to tell you, I've been carrying around your picture in my wallet for 2 years and I know what you look like. I once served you at another restaurant that that you reviewed and I didn't recognize you that time even though I had your photograph. And I waited on you this time and I still didn't recognize you. So, you know, it's like it happens sometimes and you know, I'd really rather it didn't. But it's also I don't find the experiences generally that different. Mm-hmm. If I am recognized,
are you paying attention to what's happening at, you know, two tables over? And obviously you don't know what they're tasting exactly, but you can get a sense for how happy people are.
Yes, and that I especially do if I suspect I've been recognized, because uh-huh. I want to see what kind of service they're getting, and I can't tell how their food tastes. But mm-hmm. but generally you can see whether they're getting the proper kind of attention.
Where do you like to go these days for cocktails?
Oh, the cocktail scene has gotten so great here. I love the cocktails. And actually, we did recently, I did a Best in DFW cocktails story, which you could find on guidelive.com. But let's see, the Marquee Bar and Grill has wonderful cocktails. It's Jason Cosmas in charge of the bar program there. And Cedar Social, I love the cocktails there. I love the cocktails at Komali, Abraham Saloom's Mexican place. Let's see, I'm trying to remember. Oh, you know, the Mansion had amazing cocktails, but I think that the bartender just left to go to another restaurant. Oh, I think he's going to the restaurant that Tiffany Derry, the top chef favorite Tiffany Derry, is opening, called Private Social. Mm-hmm. But I think my favorite cocktails at the moment are at Bailey's Prime Plus. They just – the I guess it was Michael Martinson and Eddie Lucky Campbell, one from Bolsa and one from Cedar Social, are now in charge of the cocktails there. And they are really amazing, like fantastic fresh ingredients, things like tequila infused with cantaloupe. And they're doing a really wonderful job.
Let's go to the phones now, 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's speak to Kimberly in Arlington. Hi, Kimberly.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I recently experienced Fireside Pies in Fort Worth and was fascinated at the rapport and the working relationship between the kitchen and the expediters and the bartenders and the servers. And I guess I just wanted Leslie's feedback on what she thought about that. She reviewed it, and if she had what her thoughts were on it, because I loved it. And they have fabulous food, in my opinion.
Well, let's find out.
Oh, that's great to hear, Kimberly. I actually didn't review it. I mean, our paper reviewed it, but it was Barbara Rodriguez did a wonderful review of that restaurant. She loved it. But it's really fun, especially, you know, when there's an open kitchen and you can see how that that relationship plays out. And you then you realize, like, what is involved. I mean, the coordination and the timing and the work and the pressure. It's, you know, when you get to see it and then you have an experience that sounds, you know, it sounds like you had a great experience. It's really fun to be able to witness that.
I know that it's been mostly other people, the paper, who've written about this, but the food truck thing is such a big deal right now. Will we settle down and get to where we sort of appreciate and like these things, but don't just go crazy over them?
Well, I hope that we get to a point where we don't have to settle down. I hope we get to a point where, because I think what's probably, I've only tasted food from a couple of them. And, you know, it was fine. But, you know, to me, nothing to get really, really excited about. But it would be great if we start seeing a little more creativity and innovation, and then maybe it will be a little more appropriate to stay really excited about it.
What convinced you to move here from L.A.?
Well, I was with, as you mentioned in your wonderful introduction, I was with the Los Angeles Times, and then we had staff reductions and I was laid off. Just really, you know, my husband and son and I had been in L.A. for 8 years. We were in New York for 15 years before that, and we were kind of feeling like it was time for a move. And this opportunity presented itself at the Dallas Morning News, and I thought it sounded like a wonderful adventure, which indeed it turned out to be.
What did you know about the scene here before you came?
Very little. I had sort of heard this, you know, thing that gets bandied about, that there's more restaurants in Dallas per capita than anywhere else in the country, including in New York. But I had never...
Is that true, by the way?
I think it's kind of impossible to know whether it's just one of those things that nobody will ever know. And what is a restaurant is a restaurant a fast food place? I don't know exactly what it means. But what I do know is that I had been to Texas many times because I have family in Houston and San Antonio and Austin. But I'd never been to Dallas. So I came for my job interview and had an opportunity to dine in some of the restaurants and just drive around town. And I was totally amazed at how many restaurants there are. I mean, it just feels like everywhere, and it feels like they're so vibrant. And of course, this was at the very end of 2009, and, you know, the economy was in a sorry state. But people were in the restaurants. And so I thought, you know, as opposed to L.A. at that moment, which was feeling very low down, I thought, you know, maybe this is really the place to be right now.
So we've had a couple of questions come in, and this one is via email from Richard about the training required for being a restaurant critic. How do you get to do what you do?
Oh, that's a great question, Richard. Thank you. There's no formal training. I think there are things that a person can bring to it or needs to bring to it. You need to be a journalist. So you need to have those kind of reporting skills and writing skills. As far as I'm concerned, I was an English major. I went to graduate school in fiction writing, but I never went to journalism school. But I started writing journalism just out of graduate school, and then worked at a newspaper and for 5 years. And, you know, that's very helpful. You also need to know about food. Mm-hmm. So it's very helpful to know how to cook. I know that there are critics who aren't really cooks, and I'm sure some of them do a wonderful job. But if you know enough about cooking to be able to taste a dish and immediately think, okay, if I were going to make that, here's what I do, then you know what the techniques used were. So it's just way easier, and you can speak about it with more, sureness and authority. And the other thing is traveling. You need to know a lot of the cuisines of the world. And I've been fortunate enough in my life to be able to have traveled all over the world. Not all over the world. I've never been to South America, which is high on my list. But it's, you know, traveling, I think, is hugely important. And knowing, and even traveling within this country, to sort of know what's possible and what the best restaurants are like and what the most motivated, ambitious, interesting chefs are doing. And you need to keep traveling. So it's not like just having traveled. So I think all of that sort of comes into it. So there's no real recipe for how to get to do it. But if you could find a way to get all those sort of skills that are required, that would be the thing.
One of the obligations of a journalist is not to allow your sort of personal emotional experiences to play into what you're reporting about. I can tell you for a fact that I've had meals that tasted 10 times better because it's a really happy day or I'm with people I like. Does it take a while to learn to separate your mood that evening or that afternoon from what you're tasting?
I think for me, you know, I'm so sort of focused when I walk into a restaurant, you know, and it's usually with friends or family or whatever, and everybody's there to have a good time. Which I am too, but I'm at the same time I'm working. So it's like, it's this switch that goes on. And, It's almost like, and the ambience and decor and all of that in a restaurant and the service comes into mood. I mean, you can walk into a restaurant in a terrible mood. And if the restaurant knows what they're doing, they can instantly put you in a good mood, you know, with friendly service or, whatever it is. I think that's part of a job of a restaurant, is to make people feel good and to, you know, to feel happy to be where they are. Of course, there's people who are so grumpy that you know that there's no way that's going to work. It's a lost cause. Yeah, but I think that is part of it. But for me, you know, I sort of I'm working. So I'm, at the same time that I'm appearing to have a great time with my friends, I'm remembering every single bite of everything I eat and everything on their plates and what everything looks like and the decor. And I'm like soaking everything up and trying to remember it all enough, focus enough, so that when I go home, I could take notes.
We have an email here from Nicole, who says, I want to thank Leslie Brenner for being tougher than previous restaurant critics. I appreciate her thoroughness and high standards. Is she unusual in that regard? Is it common for critics to go too easy on establishments? And I guess that's sort of an opinion question, but what do you think?
I think it depends on the market, on the city we're talking about, and the kind of standards that have already been set there. I mean, I think in New York, the critics are really tough. In Los Angeles, the critics are really tough. I think probably the smaller the city, maybe it tends to be a little less tough. But it's hard in a smaller city because you don't want to feel mean. You know, you want to feel like your job is to be a critic, so you need to be critical. Mm-hmm. And I'm serving the readers who work really hard for their money. And if they're going to drop $100 on dinner, I really want them to, I don't want them to have a bad surprise.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Mark in Dallas. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Chris. I wonder if you watch No Reservations and what your take is on Anthony Bourdain, especially this last season.
I'm afraid I don't watch a lot of food TV shows. I'm embarrassed to tell you. So I can't really address that. I mean, I did read Anthony Bourdain's books and cookbooks and cooked from them and ate in his restaurant when he was chef at L'Aal in New York. I ate there, but I'm afraid I can't really address his shows.
Okay, we'll move on. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Is it possible, or does there exist in this city a restaurant that is both elegant and family friendly, not necessarily crayons on the tablecloth, but would be appropriate to take people of different ages to?
I think, I think things have kind of loosened up a lot in that regard, and especially as the higher end has become more casual. Mm-hmm. I think it's just more comfortable for kids to be in restaurants. Now, I'm not talking about the kind of kids who, it's really the kind of parents who don't sort of train their kids, teach their kids how to be in a restaurant,
yeah,
which is really the same as teaching your kids how to be at the dinner table at home.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends on that. But once you have kids like that, you know, I think as restaurants have become less formal, I think it feels much more comfortable. I don't know, just what pops into my mind is Marquee Bar and Grill. I think kids would probably feel fairly comfortable there. And the Commissary, where John Tizar is, you know, he's got a long list of hamburgers and then some higher end stuff. If you have a different kind of palate, I think kids would probably feel comfortable there. And then also in places, more ethnic restaurants, we're having an incredible sort of Mexican revolution right now. All these wonderful Mexican restaurants are opening. It's not Tex-Mex. It's regional Mexican cooking. And most of the places tend to be casual enough or kind of, you know, a lot of them are family run, too. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about a wonderful, wonderful restaurant called Mesa in Oak Cliff, where, you know, you could definitely bring a well-behaved child there and the kid would feel comfortable. But it's a family-run restaurant. It's Olga and Raul Reyes and their two kids run the place. And so, you know, I can't even imagine them batting an eyelash if your kid even misbehaved.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Kyoko in Rockwall. Hi, Kyoko.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
If she can recommend any good vegetarian restaurant, like a not the chain restaurant.
Yeah, it's funny. It's something that I've been feeling like focusing more on. And you know, we really don't. I know there are a few vegetarian restaurants, but not really too many. So what I often tell vegetarian friends is, you know, that there, first of all, there are certain types of restaurants where vegetarians will do better, like, for instance, an Indian restaurant where, you know, I mean, there's a wonderful Indian restaurant in Plano called Sutra where Chef Vijay Sadhu, you know, he does wonderful things with vegetables. And let's see. I would say, you know, I think that any really good restaurant should be able to accommodate vegetarians, and Italian restaurants are a good place to go because, you know, a lot of the best pasta dishes might be completely vegetarian. One of the best things I ate all year was at Nona, which is Julian Barsotti's restaurant in kind of on the edge of Highland Park. He did an amazing, I think he called it a lasagnette. You know, sort of handmade noodles layered with stuffed zucchini blossoms and wonderful sort of fresh, bright tomato sauce. You know, you eat that, you don't think, oh my goodness, that was vegetarian, but it was really wonderful.
Where would you go for a really good salad?
I would go to, I had a great salad recently at Fearing's. I don't know if it's on the dinner menu. It's on the brunch menu. I think he calls it a farm-to-fearing salad. And it was really, you know, sort of really nice greens and then really lovely, you know, sort of perfectly applied sherry vinaigrette and these little smoked pecans, but not overwhelming, and asparagus tips that were perfectly cooked and wonderful string beans and tomatoes. And that was a really, really wonderful salad. It's a salad I would happily eat every day of my life.
So it sounds like what you would expect, but not entirely presented the way you might expect.
Oh, and there was also two wonderful little croquettes of Mozzarella Company's goat cheese. It's not where I would expect a great salad, but I found it there.
Leslie Brenner is my guest. She is restaurant critic for the Dallas Morning News. We'll come back to this conversation in a moment, and you can join us via email to think@kera.org or on the phone at 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a self-designed graduate program that allows you the chance to meet the challenges of society. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Dallas Morning News restaurant critic Leslie Brenner. We're talking about dining out in North Texas. We have an email here from Laura, who's curious to know what you think about the places you've been to in Fort Worth and if there are any special spots you would recommend.
Oh, there's some great places in Fort Worth. I have loved Ellerby Fine Foods, where Molly O'Cook is the chef. And she does the farm-to-table thing really, you know, in a really genuine, meaningful way. I think she has really good relationships with the farmers, and which is kind of what needs to happen here. And what else? Recently I went to Nonna Tata, the little tiny Italian place. Mm-hmm. That was wonderful.
That's a place where you have to sort of get there and say you're going and then come back 2 hours later when they've got space.
They take no reservations. Mm-hmm. They don't accept credit cards. You have to bring your own wine. So yeah, there's all you have to really plan. I didn't go for dinner. I went for lunch, mm-hmm. but a couple times. But just got there really early. Like tried to beat the crowds.
We have another question here from Holly about how you know what to order.
That's a great question, Holly. It's funny. Sometimes I'll be able to see the menu online or, you know, whatever before I go to a restaurant, and there's always certain things that just jump out at me. I don't know if they're like, you know, real sort of cook's dishes or, you know, things with unusual ingredients. If it feels like same old, it's probably not what I'll order. If it's something you don't see a lot, I'll probably order it.
I was curious. I was reading some of your old reviews, and it might have been Mesa you were talking about, but I can't remember. You were talking about a small wine list, but one that really matched with the food. And I wonder how you fall on that question. You know, sometimes you can go somewhere and there's just an absolute phone book full of wines, but it doesn't necessarily make the choice any easier for people deciding what to drink.
Yeah, and you know, real wine geeks love those gigantic wine lists, and there's a real value to them. I mean, I recently reviewed Charlie Palmer at the Jewel, and they have an amazing wine list, and they have it on a tablet computer, so you can, you know, it's eminently searchable, so it's maybe not as overwhelming, but, you know, if you saw the list, you'd want to sit there reading it, you know, and but then you're not talking to your guests, and so I really love a small list that's well-selected and works with the food, and there's a real skill in putting together a list like that, and not a whole lot of restaurateurs have it, but when you find it, it just makes it so, you know, so easy and wonderful for the diner. You can, like, pretty much, like, put your finger on a wine, and it's gonna work, or there's going to be somebody to, you know, tell you whether they think that's appropriate, and it just kind of makes the whole thing easier and more fun.
Let's go back to the phones now. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak with Marty in Dallas. Hello, Marty.
Hi. My question's about celebrity chefs, because I hear a lot of talk about, you know, like the big shot celebrity chefs, and that's not something that everybody can afford to go to. Is there a particular reason that her emphasis is on that? Because almost all the restaurants that she's mentioned are, you know, easily, I don't know, $75 a couple, if not 100, and higher. And what about, except for Fireside, because I like Fireside. But I'm just wondering if there's a reason that she emphasizes on those.
Well, let's talk about that.
Well, that's a great question, Marty. Thank you. Actually, I do need to cover those higher-end restaurants, but we cover a lot of restaurants that are not expensive. I mean, a couple of the places that I've just been talking about, Bamboo, that amazing Thai restaurant, or Mesa, the Mexican, the Veracruzana Mexican place in Oak Cliff. These are not at all expensive restaurants. And what I need to be doing as dining editor and restaurant critic is, you know, covering restaurants from all price points.
How long do you like to give a place after it's open before you go in for the first time?
Well, it depends. I mean, I don't want to publish a review until a place has been opened about 2 months, mm-hmm. at least about 2 months. But my first visit, you know, it depends. If I'm writing a critic's notebook about it, like a first look, I might go in a week after it's open. And then I try to just write something that would not be for a review. That would just be like, you know, my impressions, and I would not be critical. It would be more giving the reader a sense of what the place is like and what the food is like. But no, you know, no restaurant is hitting its stride after a week of being open. So it just depends. I mean, if I don't do a first look or something like that, I generally don't want to even set foot in there for a month or so. But it really depends.
When you go back and re-review an established place, are you interested in what your predecessors have written about it?
I usually I'm very careful when I review any restaurant. I don't want to read what the current critics have written about it. Mm-hmm. I think there's something that happens if you read something, you might accidentally repeat something. So I just don't even want to put my brain in that kind of position. So I don't read anything. But if it's a restaurant that's been around for a long time, and hasn't been reviewed in many, many years, I'll go back and, you know, into the archives at the Dallas Morning News and see what the critics have written about it, because I think it gives me an important context.
What's the difference for you between a trend and something that is innovative and exciting?
Ooh, that's a great question. Let's see. Food truck, I'd say probably trend, mm-hmm. Because it's not taking us to a place that we haven't been to in terms of cooking. If it's something, you know, and then I'm thinking about the whole molecular gastronomy thing. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, that felt like trend to me, but there are things that came out of it that I think chefs will always be, you know, always hang on to, like sous vide cooking. There's a real, you know, there's a real use for that. And so I think it's, you know, I think it's tough. I mean, farm to table, that had like feelings of trend, but anybody who knows anything about food knows that that is, you know, something that will always stay around because that's what good cooking is about. You know, using the best ingredients and featuring them in the sort of letting them shine. While that was going on, it felt like all anybody wanted to talk about. And chefs were using it to market themselves in a way that I sometimes found cynical. But I thought that, you know, that right away, I mean, you know, we knew that that was here to stay.
Do you pay attention to the comments that readers leave?
Sure. You know, if you go to DallasNews.com and read the reviews, there's always an opportunity to comment on a review. And we encourage it. I love reading what readers say. It's not always pretty, and it does, you know, they don't always agree with me, but I really love having that connection. And we do it on our blog too, the Eats blog, eatsblog.dallasnews.com. But I love interaction with readers.
Are they more likely to disagree with you if you don't like their favorite restaurant than if you love something that some place that they've had a bad experience?
Yes, I think so. I think, you know, it's which is natural. I mean, imagine you've been going someplace forever and you love it, and then somebody tells you it's not good. Mm-hmm. It's you know, it's hard to hear, but you know. What I tell them is it's you know, restaurant criticism, like all other criticism, is subjective, and it's my opinion. And of course I think it's based on something, but it's, you know, just because I don't like it doesn't mean that you won't like it.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Weatherford and speak with Lynn. Hi, Lynn.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
I have a question about service and etiquette in serving. And I've noticed a couple of trends that I really don't care for. And I wondered if there was any published standard of service where I could express my feelings on these things. One of my pet peeves is when I give an order to a server and a different person delivers the order to the table. All it means is the second person doesn't really know what I've ordered or any special instructions. So they bring, more likely than not, they bring me the wrong thing and I have to send it and have it done correctly. And I know that this is just a trend, but
Let's find out about that. Food runners here to stay?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the more sort of involved and serious the restaurant is, there will be runners. There will be somebody else bringing to your table. But I think that if it's a good restaurant, your waiter should come to the table with them and say, here is your, you know, you ordered the filet of sole, you ordered, you know, and explain each dish as it's set down. That's really the proper way to do it. It's, you know, I think, you know, I'm glad you brought it up, Lynn. I have the same, you know, I find that annoying too. And they should be able to get, even if the waiter doesn't reappear, they should be able to get the positions correct. This is the easiest thing in the world for waiters to do. When they take the order, they write down the positions at the table. In other words, the you know, the gentleman at 12 o'clock ordered the steak, you know, and so it should be very easy for them to place them correctly. And they so often don't. And I agree with you. It's really annoying. As for a place to talk about it, I think I can go back to the office and write a blog post about it on our Eats blog, and I'll give you a forum for it. And I've written about it in the past about you know, what good service should look like. I'll include a link to that, and then we can, you know, we'll open it up to other people's experiences, because I always love to hear service stories.
Do you have favorite spots for comfort food?
I'm not allowed to have favorite spots for anything because I have so little opportunity to just dine for fun that, I mean, there are places that I dream about going back to, like, oh, I wish I could just go to, you know, to Nona and just dig into a plate of tortelloni. That would be so much fun. So there's places that I dream about going to for comfort food, but I don't really get to have them.
Who's doing good dessert these days?
Good dessert. We did a Best in DFW Desserts, and Nona, I think, Lucia was on it. Lucia does very simple Italian desserts, mm-hmm. but just absolutely perfect. The Mansion has amazing, very elaborate, formal desserts. I like the desserts at the simple desserts at Whiskey Cake, you know, sort of a fun restaurant in Plano, and all of the desserts involve whiskey in some way. It's funny, when I did that story, I really felt like, oh my goodness, this is really not a town for great desserts. Mm-hmm. We're a little bit dessert challenged because I think people tend to like really, really sweet things here, and that's not, it's not really that serious. Oh, the Four Seasons in Las Colinas has, they have wonderful desserts.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's try Cameron in Dallas. Hey, Cameron.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if your guest could comment on Texans' fascination, addiction, whatever you want to call it, with Tex-Mex.
Are we getting over that addiction? Are we in recovery?
maybe we're coming into recovery with the whole, you know, with the whole new emphasis on regional Mexican, which I could never really understand why here in Dallas we call it interior Mexican. I mean, it might be coastal Mexican. So mm-hmm. How is that interior Mexican? But anyway.
I guess it's not border.
Is that what it refers to, the border? Okay, I never got that. Okay, so yeah, so this, I think it's easy to understand why people love Tex-Mex. It's rich and cheesy and comforting, mm-hmm. and it's familiar flavors, and you know, and there's a real place for that, especially if you grew up with it, and it's your comfort food. Then it's hard not to love it. But from the point of view, you know, from a more critical point of view, it's just not. It's limited in terms of its sort of culinary sophistication, but Mexican, true Mexican, regional Mexican food, on the other hand, I really think is one of the world's great cuisines. So it's very exciting that we have all this, you know, very cool Mexican stuff happening here now.
What do you recommend to people who want sushi?
I recommend, let's see, I love Yutaka Sushi Bistro. He gets a lot of really interesting fish from Japan, and I like Teppo. They also have good sushi at Tete Robata Bar. These places are all, you know, they're all places that kind of go beyond the, you know, the yellowtail and tuna and
California rolls
and California and the crazy rolls, which I, you know, I find not interesting at all. But you know, the thing, it's funny, we have amazing Japanese restaurants in Dallas. I mean, really, I mean, Tae-On is one of my favorite restaurants in the country. It's not so much for sushi, but it's more for, you know, the handmade soba. And he does amazing creative takes on traditional Japanese cooking. But there's a mistake that a lot of Dallas sushi restaurants make, which is that they don't season the rice. Sushi means vinegar. So that, you know, when I crave sushi, it's funny, I crave this sort of vinegary rice flavor. And you find it here very rarely.
I guess the last thing I want to ask you is what you finally decided. I'm not sure what I want to ask you. I want to talk really – well, we're running out of time. I have a long question to ask you, and we have 15 seconds left. So I'm going to thank you very much. This rarely happens to me, but I've run out of my own time on my own show. Thank you very much, Leslie Brenner, for being with us. It's been really a pleasure to have you.
Thanks, Chris. I have loved it. Thanks.
Leslie Brenner is restaurant critic for the Dallas Morning News. You can find her online, of course, at dallasnews.com. My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
The Think production team includes engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.